Welcome to the Homeschool Sanity Show, your weekly prescription for happier, healthier homeschool living. I'm your host, Dr. Melanie Wilson, Christian psychologist turned homeschooling mother of six. Hey, homeschoolers. I'm so excited to share this interview with Julie Bogart on how to maintain your homeschool commitment. I know you're going to love it. But first, I wanted to share a related personal note. We took my first homeschooled through high school son to college last week. The day after, when I was on a walk through the neighborhood, I saw all these little ones waiting to get on the bus to go to school. The temptation for a sentimental mama like me was to miss the days when my kids were that age. But this is what I thought instead. I got to experience every bit of Sam's 18 years. I squeezed every glorious drop of goodness out of them. I crossed the finish line. And while I could have done some things differently, I feel like I just got a gold medal in homeschooling. I have no regrets. I hope that encourages you in your homeschooling journey today. Now on to my interview. I have the great privilege of having Julie Bogart as a guest on the show. Julie is the owner and creator of Brave Writer, an innovative company that teaches writing and language arts to homeschooling families. Since its inception in January 2000, Julie has taught thousands of homeschool families not only how to write, but how to create rich homeschool lives, the sort that we all imagine we'll have but often fall short of living. Julie is a popular speaker at conventions in both the United States and Canada. She's written curricula and online writing courses for grades pre-K through 12th grade and adjuncts as a professor of theology at Xavier University. She home educated her five children, all of whom are adults now. She and I met through Periscope and homeschoolscopes.tv on Facebook, but this is our first podcast interview. Enjoy. Julie, I am so thrilled that you are taking the time out of your busy schedule to join me for the Homeschool Sanity Show podcast. It's been a long time in the making between trying to arrange our two busy schedules to make this happen. So I would like you to start by telling my listeners more about you. And then if you could tell us why you decided to homeschool in the first place.
Oh, thanks, Melanie. I love being here, by the way. I think your work is wonderful, and I appreciate the way you help families find sanity. I think that is probably the tagline of most homeschools would be trying to stay sane while I homeschool my children.
Yes.
So I began homeschooling back in the dark ages before the internet. My children were born in the late 80s, my two oldest kids. And at the time when I first heard about homeschooling, I wasn't even married. As a matter of fact, I was in a tiny town in Spain, and I was there considering whether or not to join this one mission agency that was going to work in Morocco. And the man that I ended up marrying, he and I were both there, but we weren't married yet. And one of his friends came up to me in this team meeting where I was being introduced for the very first time to all these people that I didn't know. And he said to me, "So, Julie, are you going to homeschool your kids?" I was 22. I had not even thought about education, let alone, I hadn't even thought about having children, let alone their education. And I had never heard of homeschooling. So I said to him, "Well, what's homeschooling?" So he started explaining to me this whole, you know, don't let the government control your children and that whole thing. But by the end of our conversation, it was funny. I sort of caught this idea that you could tailor make education for your children. So, you know, I just said, well, yeah, sure, Willie, I'm open to that. And he turned to John and he said, she's good. She's a good one for you. So that was like my first exposure. Interestingly enough, I did marry John, and his sister homeschooled all of her six kids, and they were already born, right? So I was watching this lived out in front of me. Then I watched other people who lived in Morocco homeschooling their children, and I became familiar with it as a practice and as an educational choice. Interestingly enough, I assumed I would homeschool my kids because I was living in North Africa at the time. But we moved back to the States right when Noah entered the kindergarten age. He was 5 years old. And because I had been around homeschooling so much, by then it seemed like a no-brainer choice. I was in the States, but I had really caught the vision for what it means to continue that natural bonded relationship with my child. And so homeschooling seemed like an extension of what I was already doing. It didn't seem like a big risk. I don't remember ever deciding to do it, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I think it would have taken a decision to put my kids in school, which would have meant filling out paperwork, which is like my least favorite thing in life. So I was really happy that I could avoid that.
Yeah. Well, that is one of the more interesting stories about how someone started homeschooling that I've heard. That is really neat. So how many years did you homeschool altogether?
17.
17.
Yeah, and I have five kids. And Noah, the oldest, really was homeschooled all the way through. Johanna was homeschooled, my second child. She was homeschooled all the way through as well, but by her own choice, decided to take advantage of our local school district's option for homeschoolers, which was part-time enrollment. So she took French, she took acting, she took British literature. You know, she did like extracurricular and things she really loved. And then she still did history and math and science and those kinds of things at home or with a tutor or with our co-op. So she had what I always thought was the perfectly curated high school experience. She would like go in the morning and do acting and French, come home and have lunch, take a nap, do some more homeschool, and then go to play practice after school. And all of her friends at the school were completely jealous because she had this very sane existence, speaking of sanity. Yeah. So that's what her choice was. And both the oldest kids were accepted to university on those merits. Noah was accepted to University of Cincinnati. Johanna went to Ohio State. Then the next three kids all did varying degrees of full-time enrollment at our local high school. Jacob did 3 years. Liam did 2.5 years, and Katrin did 4 years. Just full disclosure. So,
oh yeah,
total years of homeschooling, 17.
Okay. All right. Very good. You know, that is a topic for another day, because I am hearing from people who are doing these really creative hybrid arrangements.
Yes.
And it's awesome, I think, that we have those kinds of options. But we want to get back to the topic for today, because we could go off on so many tangents.
No doubt.
We want to talk about how can we sustain our homeschooling commitment. You
love
sustained
that.
It for 17 years. I just finished my 17th year.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much. But I am interested in knowing, Julie, if you ever struggled with your commitment to keep homeschooling.
That's such a great question. You know, I thought about that before we started today. I didn't ever doubt my commitment during the early years. Like while my children were in elementary and junior high, that was a de facto commitment for me. I occasionally struggled with my philosophy of home education. And I think a lot of moms go through that. You know, you feel like, am I doing it right? Mm-hmm. And so I would continue to educate myself and learn about different ways to approach homeschooling with each of my kids. When I really faced the crisis in confidence was what I call the re-upping moment, which is high school. I think for me, that was the first time I even really had to make a decision to homeschool because I suddenly was faced with feelings that a lot of parents have even before kindergarten, which is, am I capable of homeschooling at this level? Can I provide my child what he or she would get in school? And the truth of the matter is, I doubted my math skills. I wasn't worried about history. I wasn't worried about writing or English. I even knew that I could teach them foreign language. I speak fluent French, and I've learned Arabic, and I know how to teach foreign language. So I knew I could even do that. And I had really great nursing friends who did these fabulous science classes in our co-op. So I knew we could get that. But for some reason, math was like my Waterloo. I had never been good at it myself. And I was worried that my kids were going to never have the opportunity to be in the STEM, you know, careers because they had been handicapped by these literary parents. Yeah. And so that's, it wasn't that I wanted my kids to have a high school experience per se. It was more, how will I address the more challenging subject areas? And I felt like I moved from being the primary educator to an educator coordinator, you know, like a facilitator of education. So yeah, I had a little crisis of confidence at that point. Now, Noah, my oldest, he tried the part-time enrollment at high school because we had families in our homeschool arena who told us it was great. Terrible fit for him. Did not like it at all. So he wound up back home. Okay. And what we discovered, what I discovered and have learned through Noah, the oldest, was the value and power of self-education at the high school level. That was something I didn't know I could trust, and I needed to learn that lesson. So for me, that was when the commitment level really had to grow. I had to trust that what my son was telling me about his own educational journey could actually achieve the goals I secretly held in my heart. And that's where I think we usually hit that wall, right? Mm-hmm. We have a goal that we're even secretly holding on to. And when our kids are telling us things that are in conflict, it creates this crisis. At least it did for me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, I don't know if you know this about me, Julie, but my oldest son went to high school when he was 16 as a junior.
Okay.
He went full time. So I have definitely been there.
Yes. And there's also feelings about it in the homeschooling world. You can run into people who think that's selling out or, or choosing. The way I feel about education is this. I successfully got the education I needed to be who I am today through the public school system. I know that millions of children every year in the United States, in Canada, in the UK, in Australia are successfully becoming educated. The issue isn't whether or not all education is failing. We know it isn't failing for everyone, everywhere, in all contexts. What we have today are options for tailor-making, customizing that educational experience by child, by family. And that is a revolution at this stage in, you know, human development. So I see homeschooling as this awesome, incredible opportunity. But I also know that other educational streams can contribute valuable pieces to any of our experiences if we're open to using them as tools and not being enslaved to them. And I think that's really the message that helps liberate you from that stuck moment.
Yeah, you know, that's another topic that we could spend a lot of time talking about. But you and I are exactly on the same wavelength with that. I have talked on this podcast about my belief that homeschooling is about freedom. But
yes,
it is. It's about freedom. But once we have utilized the freedom that we have to homeschool, and we know that we want to do it, we know that for some of us, something gets in the way of keeping that commitment. And I know you have gotten to know lots and lots of homeschoolers through Brave Writer, through the retreats and conferences you do, through social media. That's how we got to know each other.
Yes.
And how have you found that other moms are struggling with keeping the commitment that they have made?
Absolutely. You know, that's such a fantastic question. I have thought a bit about it, and I put on a sheet of paper a few categories that are recurring in the conversations I have. I think the fundamental number one question that is mouthed in personal ways, but that boils down to a central complaint is this one. Am I doing it right? I think fundamentally, we would all feel fine doing homeschool if we felt confident that the choices we were making weren't going to ruin our children. Mm-hmm. So the bottom line that most parents feel, they almost don't even worry as much about the feeling center of the child. You know, mm-hmm. I know parents who are pretty hard on their kids, but they're so convinced that the strategy they're using is accurate, they almost don't even care how their children feel about it. Mm-hmm. There is this central need to be doing it right. And that, I think, is the bottom of the commitment place. What I usually counsel when I'm talking with parents is to stop thinking so much about whether you're doing right, but whether or not your family has a sense of joy around learning. Because the problem with only focusing on whether or not you're doing it right is that everyone can make cases for the variety of educational philosophies that will persuade you that they are the most effective in delivering a delight-directed, passionate, self-governing learner, which is what everybody wants. But it's very difficult to allow yourself to feel confident when you are comparing Charlotte Mason to Thomas Jefferson to classical to unschooling, you know, to eclectic, to co-ops. There are so many models. And that's what I think shakes the confidence in a lot of people. So the first question I think I get a lot is some level of, am I doing it right? Is this the right path? Am I going to do my children a disservice if I follow this one philosophy over this other one? Another comment that I hear a lot is, okay, so now that I feel okay about what I'm doing, why is it so hard? And honestly, I think that is across the board. You have parents who are unschooling who think it's hard. You have mm-hmm. parents who are rigidly schooling who think it's hard. You have parents who are following, you know, Charlotte Mason who think it's hard. And here's why. You're dealing with what I call free radicals, human beings. They do not conform to your plans for their lives any more than you wanted to conform to your husband's or the state's or your mother-in-law's. Everybody has an agenda for their own lives. And when we bring out, you know, this bright and shiny homeschool philosophy and dust it off and hand it to our children, they will attempt to make it their own, or they will subvert it, or they will react to it. And that is the moment where you feel like it's hard. So the first is, am I doing it right? But then secondly, well, wasn't it supposed to be easier? If I'm doing it right, shouldn't it be easier? The third one then, of course, that follows, where is all this hardness coming from? The unhappiness of your children. So I hear a lot of parents say to me, you know, I tried this, but everyone was miserable. Everyone was miserable. Well, that's a horrible feeling. You put your heart and soul into making this beautiful plan. Maybe you've even put your heart and soul into making it fun or delightful. Mm-hmm. And then people shrug their shoulders, you know, mm-hmm. walk into the other room, ask if they can get back on the iPad and play their, you know, Candy Crush game. I mean, that's a horrible feeling for a parent. So those would be the three ways that I hear. What do you hear, Melanie? Those are really common to me.
I think you have covered it. I really do. And I was just thinking, you know, the bottom question, or at least it is on my list, I've been taking notes as you're speaking, where is all the hardness coming from? Is it, if it's coming from my children's unhappiness,
yeah,
then am I doing them a disservice to continue homeschooling?
Mm. Yes, I think that would be the way they take that question and use it to undermine their homeschooling commitment. One of the things that I like to tell parents when we're talking about what to do when it's hard is to back away from solutions. Solutions are sort of like the triage or the Band-Aid or the, you know, tourniquet that you're trying to put on this bleeding. But we're not actually dealing usually with physical blood. Uh-huh. Nobody is actually going to die. We have some time to pay attention and observe the unhappiness, to see what it collects around, to be curious and interested in what's not working rather than just rushing to overhaul and change things. So one of the things that I recommend to homeschooling parents, for example, in our coaching community, is to start keeping a once a month written narrative of a day of learning in your family. One of the ways to begin to unlearn some of your habits about fixing immediately or shaming your children into behavior that you want to see them do is to actually pay attention and give language to what's going on in your family. Because a lot of times our expectations of what we think our children should be enjoying is bigger than what's actually going on. But if you actually drilled down and paid attention for a day, you would see pockets of joy. You would see your children thriving and growing. And what you're asking for is this unreasonable level of sustained gratitude for all that you do for your children. And it's actually unrealistic. It's totally reasonable, for example, for children to be cranky every single day. It's reasonable. They live in your house. They're around you all the time. Should they be cranky all day, every day? Well, no. If it starts to move into this zone of misery, that's a whole different thing than your children gave you good energy from 9 till noon. They ate lunch. And now somebody who's a little tired and moody is whining about copy work. That is not the same as hating the Charlotte Mason method of education. Mm. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So I think we have to start to scale. We have to start to pay attention and not allow one invalidation or one day of a moodiness or even a recurrent moodiness at 2 p.m. to be the verdict on our entire homeschool experience.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. As a psychologist, I think it is so valuable to record, to take notes on what is actually happening rather than making a blanket assessment.
Yes.
And it's, yes. The assessment is always very negative when it comes to what we're doing and, you know, wanting to throw the baby out with the bathwater. So I love that. Just
Thank
great.
You.
Just great
yes.
advice.
Well, and you know, just what you just said is really interesting. I love that you are a psychologist, and I absolutely am not. So I absolutely am open to any input that you have to make sure that we're always operating with the best principles in place. But one of the things that I've noticed by being a patient in a psychological context, in a therapeutic context, is that therapists and psychologists are about process. They're about actually having self-awareness. Mm-hmm. And one of the keys to growth isn't simply implementing a new structure. It's having the awareness of what's going on with you. Because otherwise, you'll just move from structure to structure to structure, and the same old problems, same old attitudes, same old behaviors will come along with you. And that's what creates despair. It's the feeling of, I've tried everything I know how to try, and it still feels the same way. So one of the ways I've noticed with homeschool is when we move into the observer mode, we lay down the judgment and we actually give room for our children to show up in a new way in front of our eyes. If we make the judgment, for example, oh, she's lazy. She hates doing copy work. She hates writing. She hates working hard. She's lazy. Then suddenly everything we're watching is through this lens of laziness. And we will miss the moment when she actually went in the living room and cleaned up all the blocks on her own because you were busy making dinner and you didn't see that happen. So observation gives you the opportunity to let go of the label and to begin to create a different portrait so that you're responding to a whole person and not just reacting to your judgments.
That's just excellent. I could not agree more. It's so powerful. Not just for a child who hears a label, even if we don't say it out loud, oh, you're lazy, even if we think it, it's an issue. It's a problem.
Well, it creates an energy, right? So most of what I feel like the work that I do in homeschooling, you know, beyond Brave Writer, which is, you know, about ostensibly writing, but underneath it is the parent-child dynamic, which supports the writing. So on the level of how do we support this relationship with our children is the willingness to lay down our need for armor, self-protection. And so one of the things that happens when you're feeling like your homeschool isn't successful is we either want to blame our children or blame ourselves. We have a really hard time actually seeing it the way it is. We end up creating judgments as a buffer. So some temperaments feel more comfortable saying, I have four strong-willed children, right? Like that's the temperament that says, I had a mom call me and she said, oh, I have four strong-willed children. And I said, oh, really? That's pretty unusual. How many kids do you have? She said, four. So we paused and I said, is there any chance they could have a strong-willed mother? And she paused and I said, well, the thing of it is it sounds to me like you have an agenda of what you want them to cooperate with. And all four of them are saying no. So who's got the strong will? And that was a moment for her. And then I have other parents who will come to me and say things like, you know, I'm failing. I'm doing such a bad job. I don't know how to meet my children's needs. And I might pause and say, well, you know, is someone going through puberty? Is it possible that there's just a seismic shift in your relational dynamic? And it's new to you. It doesn't mean you're bad or that you've suddenly become bad. It's a new dynamic. So I think that's part of what's going on here. It's trying to get some distance from the issue long enough to suspend judgment and then be kind to yourself, kind to your child, kind to the environment.
And really, I think underneath what you're saying with these examples, Julie, is the importance of getting perspective from other people. Sometimes we just can't be objective about our own teaching, our own children, our own homeschooling. And that's when it's just wonderful to be able to reach out to someone else who has more experience, who has your best interests at heart.
Totally.
Who can say, okay, I think maybe your expectations are a little too high. I think maybe you're being too hard on yourself and too doomsday about your child. We tend to do that sometimes. We think, totally. Oh no, they're not going to turn out right. And it's going to be all my fault.
So completely.
I love that moms are coming to you and asking you for your input on these issues. And I know they're coming away with just so much wisdom and a different perspective.
Well, and it's community too. So mm-hmm. There's only so much I can say. My children are now grown. I know that the community of homeschoolers today are dealing with some issues that I didn't even deal with. And it really matters that we're caring and kind to each other. I posted on Facebook today, on the Brave Writer page, the importance of welcoming homeschool misfits, which a lot of us have felt like. I'm pretty sure most people have felt like a homeschooling misfit in some community at some point in time. There is this tendency to gather under the shelter of ideological purity, the feeling that if we all agree to these same principles and ideals, we will be safe from a child being unhappy or unsuccessful. We have proven as a culture, as human beings, that that's not possible. Mm-hmm. Ideology does not save anyone. What saves us is community. It's the feeling of participating in something larger than ourselves, where there is kindness, caring, support, offers of help. That's what creates, you know, right now in Louisiana, the reason that everyone can recover from the flood is everyone has laid down their politics in order to help each other get out of a flood situation. I think if we look at homeschool and we think about the power of supporting one another and not using our own anxiety as a wall between each other, we would be so much more powerful and strengthened as a group. So yeah, I love giving advice. I know you do. We have that opportunity having homeschooled kids for a long time, having the backgrounds that we have. But the bottom line is this movement grows in strength when the people in it treat each other with kindness and support rather than judgment and accusation.
Absolutely. I recently did an episode on how to handle homeschool Pharisees that I think is related to that very statement. But I am feeling really encouraged because I think the communities that you and I are involved in have demonstrated that it is possible to have support without drama, without personal attacks. It's really, really been a blessing. And I'm going to put your Brave Writer page, and you also have a group as well, right?
Yes. On Facebook? So we have a few things. We have a Facebook group that is facebook.com/bravescopes, because it was originally created, Melanie, when we were all doing Periscope together. And so that one is for people who were doing Brave Writer lifestyle Periscopes, which are these, you know, video, sort of like a podcast on video. And that group, I was only going to keep together for a month, and they didn't want to leave. So we retitled the page Brave Schoolers, but the address is still Brave Scopes. And that's got almost 2,000 people in it, and everybody just shares very freely about Brave Writer lifestyle issues. That's a free community, obviously. But then I also have a paid coaching community called the Homeschool Alliance, which can be found at coachjuliebogart.com. And that community I treat almost like a master's level or a graduate school class for home education. Each month I provide a reading related to parenting or learning or education for us to digest. I do a podcast just for the Alliance. And then we also do a web conference every month. We also do a challenge where I bring in some extracurricular activity and give you three levels of challenges to do it with your kids. So we've done things like astronomy or going to a live performance of music or board games or things that help you expand what homeschool feels like, not just math, reading, science, etc.
Oh, those sound like amazing resources. And I will put everything that you are sharing as a resource in the show notes for this episode. Perfect. At homeschoolsanity.com/commitment, because that is what we are talking about. If someone who is listening to us right now, Julie, is really ready to quit, they are ready to give up on their homeschooling, what should she do before making that decision?
Such a good question. You know, of course, I am not the kind of person who thinks that you should continue to do something just because you've always done it. That said, quitting is a big deal. And I like people to drill down to understand what quitting means to them. So, for example, let's say you just got the diagnosis of breast cancer and you anticipate going into major radiation, chemo, and are going to be out of commission. And you have four or five kids and a husband who works overtime at his job. It might behoove you to put your kids in school with that open-ended feel that you could always bring them home again, to really pay attention to your health. If it seemed to you that homeschooling was going to suddenly be completely off your radar. That doesn't mean that you can't have breast cancer in homeschool. I have a dear friend who did just that and found that to be the easiest way to manage her cancer. But I know each person's personality is different. And so if you are facing a huge life-altering circumstance, divorce, the death of a spouse, cancer, a child with some kind of disease, debilitating disease, a hurricane that took out your house, you know, foreclosure, some huge life-altering event. If that is going on in your life right now, you have the right and freedom to consider every educational opportunity that will support you in getting through that transitory time with the least stress on you. Because a healthy family is far more important than an educational choice. So that would be my first comment. Now, for a person who is simply struggling, like, my kids are unhappy and I can't tell if I'm doing a good job, and I wander the halls of my house like a nomad feeling abandoned by my children. I had someone write me last week and she said, I wake up every morning and I think homeschool drives me insane. I hate it. And then Yeah. And then she said, but by the end of the day, I think the thought of public school drives me insane. I hate it. Help. I have 7 children. What should I do? Mm. So if that's the question we're asking, the first thing I would say is let's calm the storm and drill down and actually articulate what you hate. Mm-hmm. What do you hate right now? And some of these are feelings that we want to address first before we address logistics. So are you tired? Are you bored? Are you lonely? Are you criticized and unsupported by a very important person in your life, like a spouse or a mother or a best friend or a sister who's a school teacher? Are you losing confidence because one of your children is openly attacking you, criticizing you, like daily? This is not an uncommon experience, but it is rarely talked about. And it really shatters the confidence of mothers. So you'll have, you know, this 14 or 15-year-old daughter or son who suddenly knows everything. Maybe it's your oldest child, and they are telling you that you're ruining their life. That will shake a mother's confidence, especially when she feels like she has just, you know, laid her life on the line. So the first thing to do then is to drill down. What are those feelings? Where are they coming from? If it's fatigue, what kind of fatigue is it? Is it chronic fatigue because you have a toddler who and a bedwetter and you're pregnant and you're still breastfeeding? If that's the case, then what you want to start doing is looking at the style of homeschooling that is contributing to increased fatigue and start considering options that will give you more space to be tired. Let me give you an example. When I had 5 kids, you know, my baby, I was actually 4 kids and pregnant. Liam was not sleeping through the night. He was 2. And Noah was a chronic bedwetter. And so I was literally exhausted all the time. I think you can all remember that feeling if you were ever pregnant or had a bedwetter. And I found myself feeling like a zombie. It was the first time that we really experimented with the philosophy of unschooling, which at the time didn't even have a name. It was called brain-based learning, according to what I knew about it. And it took the pressure off me to prepare. I decided that I was just going to let my kids learn, and I was going to come alongside and take notes. It's what I call back-end planning. So you count everything, but after you've done it. So instead of doing it up front, you just pay attention and then you write it down somewhere and then you pat yourself on the back because it happened. This is a perfectly valid way to home educate. And for fatigue, it can take over for the feeling of wanting to quit. Secondly, some parents are losing their commitment because they've been doing it a long time. It's very easy to get bored by the 4 walls, by the repeated insistence of, okay, now we're going to read. Now we're going to do copy work. Now we're going to study history. And the feeling that your life is becoming monotonous. Well, if that's true for you, it's probably also happening for your kids. And so a shakeup is perfectly valid. I always say ditching curriculum because you're tired of it is perfectly valid. You don't have to use something just because it works. If you're no longer inspired by it, it's okay to try something else to stir the pot. Sometimes boredom comes from isolation. So if you've been alone too long in your homeschooling, now would be a good time to gather a few friends and see if you can create some cooperative learning, whether that's a group of 4 families and you all just alternate who throws a party every month, or you join some big official co-op where you have a full class day every Monday. And know on Mondays, you get to just sit and chat with other moms while your kids are being taught something. These are ways of addressing the feeling of wanting to quit, because what you're really facing is the limits of your human personality. And it's okay to make adaptations, to change, to find other methods. If, however, you want to quit because you're done, it's okay to be done. That's one of the hardest things, I think, for homeschool parents to realize. It's okay to be done. I remember hearing Susan Wise Bauer say in a talk that with her youngest daughter, she put her in high school because she was done, not because her daughter even wanted to go. She just decided that she had done so much homeschooling, and it was not interesting enough anymore for the two of them. They needed a new adventure together. That's a valid reason to do something else. Here's what I will tell you about that experience, and Melanie, maybe you can confirm it for yourself. I found that my kids who had been homeschooled for their entire childhoods treated high school very differently than their public school peers. And it was a kind of adventure. In fact, one of the things that that I discovered about the experience of home education in public school is that public school became our homeschooling experience. It was almost like I was homeschooling them to be a public school student. We still partnered on all kinds of things. I was still actively involved in addressing whatever they were learning. They were willing to do extra work if they wanted to. I had kids who made friends with teachers and hung out with those teachers at lunch to get extra help or extra information. Liam developed a whole relationship with his English teacher where they would read short stories and discuss them at lunch. And I never found that out until he was done with high school, because it was just such a pleasure to him. You know, Noah is famous for having written a poem in his first math test. They approach school really differently. So what I want you to know is you have fundamentally altered the course of your child's life simply by homeschooling, even for a few years. That gift will continue to keep on giving no matter what other choices you wind up making in the future. So it's really a question of, is it a major life change that you're facing? Is it just tiredness, boredom, needing to get out of isolation? Or are you done? And I think those are three different impulses around quitting and require three different approaches.
I just completely agree. You get my stamp of approval on all the advice that you're giving. Just excellent. And actually, I really wish that I had been able to talk with you, Julie, when I was experiencing the crisis of sending my son to high school. Mm-hmm. I knew it was the right choice when he said he wanted to go, but I had so much unnecessary anxiety about it. Mm. I want to switch gears just a little bit, though, and I want to say, okay, so now we have a listener who does not want to quit.
Yes.
She wants to keep going.
Yes.
But it's hard. It's hard.
Yeah.
You know? One of the things that I have noticed both in myself and in other homeschooling moms is that there is a shortage of rewards in some aspects of our homeschooling journeys.
Yes.
You know? Yes. Especially if we don't have a child who is in, you know, the geography competitions and just, you know, winning and just bringing us so much attention and pride to our homeschooling efforts. If we're just day after day teaching our children, we're at home, no one really knows what we're doing. Our children are not yet rising up and calling us blessed. How do we experience the rewards of homeschooling? And the reason that I'm asking you that question, Julie, is because I heard you talk about this. I heard you talk about a homeschool mom's payday and what it is. And I was hoping that you could explain that for us.
Yes, absolutely. I love talking about this because this term isn't even my own term. One of my best friends in the homeschooling lifestyle is a woman named Sherry. She has 8 kids. Her youngest child has Down syndrome. Her husband left her, and she's been raising them alone. She is absolutely one of my favorite people on the planet, and she's done homeschooling, public school, all different things based on her life story. So anyway, when you go through hardship, especially, and you don't always know what the fruit is going to be of your children. I was going through one of those painful experiences, and then I shared with her something that had happened that was positive. You know, my kid got an award for something he did at the co-op, and she immediately said, oh, payday. And I said, payday? And she said back to me, anytime something good happens that I can attribute to having been raised by me, I just say to myself, this is my pay. This is the reward. It's like it's delayed, right? Like I don't get a pay stub. I don't get to put anything in the bank. But there will be these moments when suddenly I see the payout of that effort. And she said, I just make a conscious effort to say to myself, payday, so that I mark the moment. I don't miss it. Well, that became an incredible tool for me. So what I started noticing, and this is how it can apply to anyone. You've been working, 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 trying to help this youngest child read. And then all of a sudden you hear them wake up in the middle of the night, walk into the hallway and read Gap on the bag of clothes you're about to give away. And you're like, oh, payday. They figured it out. This little six-year-old just read Gap without any help from me. That's the reward from my endurance, from my working with this child. And it can be far into the future. I'll tell you a little story because I think this is important for parents to hear. My son, Jacob, who went to high school full-time starting his sophomore year, he took me out for dinner when he was at the end of his sophomore year. So I think, oh, great, I'm going to go out for dinner, and he will rise up and call me blessed. And while we were at dinner, he rose up and called me cursed. He basically told me that I had ruined his academic opportunity by homeschooling him, which was a shocking thing to hear from my wonderful middle child. And so I listened. I always say that's one of those solar plexus moments, you know, thump right in the chest. You're like, oh, no. Oh, no. How do I still feel good about myself when he's about to tell me all the ways I've failed him? And, you know, he had his list. It was math. It was he could have been further in math if he had been in school than at home because I didn't take the aggressive approach that all of these academic kids in school took, which, by the way, was deliberate on my end, right? So he's judging my deliberate choice. He wanted to compete. He wanted good grades. He wanted all these things. So I took it, and it was hard. And I told him, I said, Jacob, you will make choices for your kids that they have no say in, just like I've done with you, and I'm really sorry that you're disappointed in what those choices were. My hope is that someday you'll at least understand the choices. You never have to agree with them. You never have to make them for your kids. You don't even have to defend homeschooling to a single person in your life. But I did make those choices consciously with love. And so my hope is maybe someday when you're like 40, you'll come back to me and go, oh, I get why you made that decision. You don't have to ever love it. So we made this deal. We shook hands. We hugged. You know, he went off into his high school years. And lucky for me, his senior year of high school, he was assigned a paper to write about William Faulkner. I sent him to the local Xavier University with my library card because I was a student there at the time, grad school. And he came home and he said, Mom, I know why you decided to homeschool me. Out of the blue. And he's a senior now. And I said, really? I'm thinking, oh, good. He's not 40. This is awesome. I said, why? And he said, as I sat in the library on the floor with all these books around me, all I could think was, I could write a really great paper if I was homeschooled, but school isn't going to give me enough time to read everything I want to read, to know everything I want to know, to write the paper I want to write. And so he said, I get it now. And in my heart, I was like, payday.
For sure.
And that's the idea behind payday. And it can be as small as, you know, your child winning a badge for memorizing 100 Bible verses in Awana, or it can be something that is more substantial, where they actually get that you sacrificed something for them, or that you made an intentional, conscientious, with love decision on their behalf that they didn't understand. But payday is your way of self-affirming those choices and those actions. So yeah, I love it. We use it as a hashtag. I think it's great.
Oh, that is wonderful. And thank you so much for sharing that story. I was very nervous about how that was going to turn out.
Well, yeah, right? And the thing of it is, you have to be willing for children to have their own personal experience. One thing that I have made clear from the beginning with my children is I do not require you to give homeschooling a good reputation. That's not their job. I have a dear friend whose son struggled with alcohol, got DUIs, ended up in prison. She's a fabulous homeschooling mother. Should we discount her insight or experience because of what she went through with her son? But the temptation is to think that homeschooling prevents that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the case. That's why we need to be kind to each other, because when you're in your darkest hour, you need to know that there are homeschoolers who have your back, because we are a small community. There's only 2.5 million families in America out of 325 million people. You can live alone as a homeschooler. And when you're in crisis, you should have people you can turn to who will not judge you, who will validate that decision, and will help you see the sacrifices that you made with your best lights at the time and support you during those challenges. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important. Homeschooling is not a panacea. It's a method of education. Health and unhealth in families are unrelated to educational choice. I've seen very healthy families with school kids, and I've seen very unhealthy families who homeschool. So what we want is to support each other, become the healthiest individuals we can be, and then make our educational choices with the best information and lights at the moment, and then hope for the best.
Mm-hmm. Right. And as a Christian homeschooler, I have to just give it to God and say, yes, you called me to do this, so it's your responsibility to use me, an imperfect mother, an imperfect teacher, to do the very best that I can for these imperfect children. And, you know, he deserves all the glory for the good that comes of it. And I certainly deserve gratitude.
Yes.
When I can get it. I take it when I can get it. I don't always, but...
Well, they also don't have anything to contrast with. If they've ever been homeschooled, they don't know that you're sparing them mountains of homework. They don't know what it feels like to need a permission slip to go to the bathroom. These are things that we take for granted as gifts, but they take for granted as normal daily life. They've been living in this house all this time. You know, when you brought up before, like, what is a payday and what's a way to keep your commitment going and how do we self-affirm? I honestly believe that the core of a home education should be the growth and development of the home educating parent. Mm. So instead of thinking all the time about how well are my children growing, ask yourself, when is the last time you grew? What are you doing to invest in your own education, to create an active lifelong learner in yourself? Because that will sustain you. That shores up your sense of personhood. It keeps you interested. It reveals to you the struggle to learn, master, grow, understand, internalize, benefit from, and use, and makes you a much more compassionate, interesting home educator for your children. So if you are really drowning in this boring, tedious, tiring task of homeschool right now, I challenge you to just forget about it. Go get interested in something. It could be art history. It could be weaving. It could be gardening organically. You could decide you want to run a marathon. Pick something that challenges your imagination, your academic growth, maybe even your body, and get involved in that right smack dab in the middle of the day in front of your children, and worry less about them and more about your own growth, because I promise you, it is going to spill out of you right, left, and center and benefit your children. And then what ends up happening is you have renewed energy, because now you're filled up, and when you come to their lessons, there's less riding on it. Mm-hmm. You already have an identity. It's not beholden to what a six-year-old thinks of you.
That's right. And I say all the time that what our children want most, and this is actually backed up by research, is a happy mom.
Yes.
So... Yes. I love your advice for doing things that make you happy, because it will have real tangible benefits for your children and your homeschool.
Absolutely. Well, and the thing is, we all say that we're trying to raise lifelong learners. So be one. Mm-hmm. And give yourself permission to be one. It's not about adding one more hard thing to your plate. I'm not talking about that. I had one mom say, wait a minute, now you want me to add underwater basket weaving to my already full schedule? It's not that. Even if it means just reading an interesting political blog a day, if it means igniting your own imagination. And that's why for me personally, when I was first really growing as a home educator, the way that came to me was through the Charlotte Mason method, because I suddenly got interested in things like nature and art history that had been sort of opaque to me as a child. And because I got interested in them, it was much easier to generate interest for my children. But if I was only thinking, well, they need to be interested, but it's not that interesting to me, doesn't really fuel the homeschool in the same way. Mm-hmm. So, you know, chase your own passions, because that's the family legacy you get to leave with your kids as well. Mm-hmm. They're going to take, you know, I have a friend who's, this was classic. I'll tell you one more story because it's a good one. So this one unschooling family in Missouri would have their kids take writing classes through Brave Writer. And they were a fabulous family. And their kids would participate or not because they were unschoolers. So a couple of them would finish the class. Some of them wouldn't. You know, it was really like they were very, held it very loosely. And the mom said to me, oh, Julie, I wish my kids were as interested in writing as yours. Your daughter writes poetry and a novella. Your son wrote a screenplay. Your other son loves to write essays. Like, I can't get my kids to be that interested in writing. And I was like, well, you know, their dad's a composition teacher. I'm a freelance writer. It's kind of what we do. And I said, what do your kids do? Well, here's what they do. She had one daughter who took old issues of Mother Jones magazine and built low-tech habitats in their backyard as a model of what could be used in disaster areas and refugee camps for fun. And then her other daughter cross-pollinated fish in the creek on their property. Well, the older daughter ended up working in a high capacity for Habitat for Humanity, and the other daughter went into the sciences, hello, obviously. Mm-hmm. My kids can't even plant a seed in the ground. You know? So let's just be honest. She and her husband were farmers. They were agricultural people. So of course that's what her kids were interested in. Don't sell short the things your family is good at. That is the legacy you offer them, and they get to build on that legacy.
Mm. That's just excellent. I love it.
Isn't that great?
It's so funny.
It's like cross-pollinating fish. I think you're fine.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, definitely not low achievers there. No. That is wonderful. Julie, I could really continue this conversation for another couple of hours, but I know that isn't going to work with your schedule. But what I can do for our listeners who feel the same way that I do, they just want to get more from you, is I can recommend a series of books that you've written. It's a seasonal series called A Gracious Space. And they are just a great resource for maintaining your homeschool commitment, keeping your enthusiasm for it going. In fact, I know one of our members of homeschoolscopes.tv on Facebook said that she is a secular homeschooler, and so she uses your books as her devotional.
Oh, isn't that nice?
Yes, and I thought that was great.
Yeah, they're written. Yeah. I wrote them with the devotional model in mind, but they are non-sectarian, so that a person of any faith or no faith would feel that they could still have that spiritual kind of moment in the morning where you just tune into yourself, tune into your aspirations, and are able to have a new outlook. Really, that's the goal of that kind of reading. And so thank you for sharing that. One thing I'll mention is that starting on the day after Labor Day, September 6th, I'm going to read an essay a day on Facebook Live on the Brave Writer page from the Gracious Space Fall Edition. So if your readers or your listeners want to read along, they would be welcome to join me then.
Oh, that's great. And I'm sure many of them would be. And that's a great time for them to interact with you as well. If you're not familiar with Facebook Live, this gives you an opportunity to talk directly to Julie. Obviously, she can't answer everyone's questions, but she is definitely there to encourage and point you in the right direction. And other people who are watching the Facebook Live broadcast can do the same. I've had that happen many times, where the other viewers are just a font of information for you as well. Yes. Well, Julie, this has been just excellent. I really can't wait for people to hear it and for people to connect with you more. I will have all the places that you've talked about where people can get connected with you available. I will also be putting up your Brave Writer website. Can you tell us just a little bit more before you go about what they can find at bravewriter.com?
Yes. So Brave Writer is the writing and language arts company that I started 17 years ago. The goal of Brave Writer is to empower parents to become effective coaches and allies in their child's writing process. All of our materials cover writing in every possible way. We're a complete curriculum, but we are built on developmental stages of growth more than ages or grades. So take a little time to tune in. I have a whole podcast series that helps you understand those stages of growth. Our products and our online classes are all built to empower the whole family, not just your children, so that you'll go forward with confidence that we've been talking about today instead of doubt and anxiety.
Well, you definitely practice what you preach, Julie. I have seen you really encourage homeschool moms to stop doubting themselves and to even stop questioning why it's so hard. We already know why it's so hard, right?
Yes. Anything worth doing is going to challenge us to the nth degree. Getting comfortable with challenge is part of what it means to homeschool. Just because, learn that this is how it should feel. It's like saying while you're running a marathon, why is this hard? Because it is.
Yes, that is it. Julie, this was just a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Melanie. You're awesome. I love doing this with you. So if you want to do this again, we will. But I thoroughly enjoy getting to know you. I'm glad Periscope brought us together.
I am too.
Thank you for joining me for the Homeschool Sanity Show. This has been a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network.